Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We will get to a variety of different subjects over the next 60 minutes, but we're going to start off with some news related to the NFC East, and we'll also get into some Giants-related matters as well. And, Paul, what we found out last night, now nothing is official until the new league year starts, but the Redskins and the Chiefs have agreed to a deal in which Alex Smith is going to be heading to Washington, and Washington is going to send Kansas City a third-round pick as well as one of their up-and-coming corners, Kendall Fuller, who is a versatile corner who could play inside and outside. And that means that Redskins, in all likelihood, are moving on from Kirk Cousins after he's had a consistent tenure with the Redskins, which means that the Redskins are giving a gift to any quarterback needy team on the free agent market, since Cousins will probably get a lot of interest, deservedly so. I know there's been a lot of teams that have been thrown out there across the rumorville, but you know, Alex Smith is one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the NFL, in my opinion, Paul. And I think if you're going to replace a guy like Kirk Cousins, who has been good at protecting the football, has been good in terms of his decision-making, and has been consistent, I understand that the Redskins haven't necessarily gone to the playoffs every single year, but Smith is from that type of fold in terms of a guy that you know he can run a system. He's not going to put your offense in a bad position, and he can certainly thrive. So, you know, if you're going to replace Kirk Cousins, Alex Smith, to me, is one of your better options to come in and fill that void.
Well, it also says to me that the Redskins are going to rely more on the running game, and they must think that, you know, their combination of backs, including Samaje Perine, this year's rookie.
Those guys need to stay healthy first, though.
Are going to be a big part of what they're going to do. It also says to me that Kirk Cousins is going to get upwards of $25+ million a year in his new contract.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Because now he's in position to go to the highest bidder. He's now no longer locked into whatever it is that the Redskins were going to do with him, whether or not they threaten to tag him again or will give him a transition, perhaps, as you have said many times. The bottom line is now it is an open market. It's going to be highest bidder for Kirk Cousins. And Stafford is right now at 25. Is that his average salary per season?
He may be up there. I'm not exactly
sure
of the numbers.
He's the number one.
But Stafford, well, because you remember, quarterback contracts, I'm glad you brought that up, and I'll let you continue.
It's about
timing.
Every year.
But it's about timing. It's about when you're due for a contract, not necessarily whether you're the greatest quarterback ready to receive a deal. That's the big difference.
It's all about, I want to get at least a penny more than the last guy
exactly.
who just signed.
Bingo. No, that's 100% right, Paul. No, and I wish that a lot of people would understand that, because everybody looks at a quarterback contract, Paul, and what is the initial knee-jerk reaction? That guy's not worth that money. What people need to understand is it's not about whether or not he's thrown 75 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. It's about him and his agent are looking at the market, Paul, and you're right. They see Matthew Stafford's deal. They go to their respective teams. We'll use Kirk Cousins, for example. He's going to the Redskins, and he's saying to himself, listen, Matthew Stafford got X amount of dollars. You know, I've been a consistent quarterback for you. This is what the market looks like. This is what we're expecting. Not to mention, Kirk also received the franchise tag each of the last 2 seasons and made a ridiculous amount of money. He's not necessarily in a rush to all of a sudden see that annual salary dip overnight. So that's another thing in terms of the game of leverage.
You want to get sick? I've rechecked the numbers.
Yes.
Matthew Stafford is the number one quarterback in terms of average salary at $27
million. Okay, so slightly higher, but 25 was a good estimate. Yep.
And Derek Carr, for the record, is number 2.
Who also recently got an extension.
Just over 25, followed by Andrew Luck at just under 25, and Drew Brees at just over 24. Kirk Cousins was just under 24 because he was tagged this past season again.
Yep.
It seems to me, okay, him and his people are going to have a real easy time saying, well, Brees is 39, so how could he be worth more than our guy? Luck is coming off significant injury issues. How could he be worth more than our guy? Derek Carr also coming off an injury problem. How could he be worth more than our guy? And Matthew Stafford, you know, he's been underrated. I give you this.
He's been solid.
He's a solid quarterback. He's put up some sensational numbers. He's been a good comeback quarterback in terms of fourth quarter performances. I get all of that. But I got a feeling that Cousins and his people will say, you know what? we think we deserve more than Stafford does,
and they
too.
Should. I mean, why not? You've got nothing to lose. No, I agree with you 100%, Paul. I would say that they're looking at Stafford's contract as what they are going to be asking for on the open market. And here's the other thing to consider, Paul. How often in the National Football League does a legitimate, polished, veteran quarterback, who's also young, by the way, under 30 years old, hit the free agent market and not return to their respective team? How often does that happen?
Very, very rarely.
So that's another reason why he and his representatives are saying to themselves, yeah, we're certainly going to cash in. I mean, think about the other guys in recent history. Okay, Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning was also at the tail end of his career, and he was coming off of four neck surgeries, so I wouldn't even throw him in the same situation as Kirk Cousins.
Clean bill of health changes the entire equation.
Of course, but that's why I'm just thinking of other quarterbacks that are polished veterans that hit the free agent market. Drew Brees is another one.
Even when Kurt Warner came to the Giants as a street free agent, he was 33 years old, and he had had a broken thumb with the Cardinals within a year and a half before he signed, and that's one of the reasons why Trent Green stole his job, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't Trent Green. Was it Trent Green?
Wait, you're talking about, Kurt Warner took Trent Green's job.
Right.
Yeah.
But then he lost his job to, what's his name?
Mark Bulger. Yes.
There you go, Mark Bulger.
I didn't know. I thought you were going back the initial stage.
I was flopping him.
Okay.
Bulger had taken Kurt's job because Kurt had the thumb problem. Mm-hmm. And then the Rams said, okay, fine. They let him go. And the Giants picked him up. He was 33 years old, but he certainly had a lot of good football left in him.
Interesting chart that I'm seeing up on our computer. David Dominic, our tremendous producer, filling us in on the money related to the four quarterbacks that are in the Super Bowl, just to put things in perspective.
Okay.
So Brady is $20.5 million. This is obviously the annual salary for this season. Case Keenum, $2 million. Nick Foles, $5.5 million. And Blake Bortles, $5.1 million. So we gave you the four that were in the conference championship games. So three of the four quarterbacks were making under $6 million, which is a luxury in the National Football League.
That's almost as much as you make.
Well, I think you're being awfully kind there, Paul. Yes. That means that I'm still underrated then under those circumstances, I would argue. My agent needs to do a better job. But in all seriousness, when you pay a quarterback, Paul, and I don't care about the elite label, whatever, why do you think the Vikings had the luxury of knowing that you're going to be able to keep a strong defense together and you're going to be able to pay Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen? It's when you pay your quarterback $2 million. Now, granted, Bradford's making money. Teddy Bridgewater was on a rookie contract, so it wasn't just Keenum they were paying. You got to look at it like that. But when your starting quarterback is taking up just $2 million in terms of average annual salary, does wonders. But that's the rare occurrence. This is not happening. You had the chart in terms of all the average annual salaries. Everybody who has a legitimate starting quarterback, got to pay him $20 million a year.
There are 10 to 12 starting quarterbacks in this league who are over 20 in terms of averaged salary. But I
mean,
think about this on this chart. Foles and Wentz combined, are at only – I am reading that right.
No, you're
100%
That's
ridiculous.
That.
It's only $12 million.
Well, keep in mind, Wentz,
combined.
Wentz is on the rookie contract.
Understood. But you know how incredibly lucky the Eagles are to be spending only $12 million on the quarterback position?
Allows you to address other areas, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And that Brady also is a guy that's taken pay cuts during the course of his career, too. So even 20 and a half.
His wife's making a lot of money.
Absolutely. Well, when you have a model who is bringing home billions of dollars, you're right. It's easy for you to make those sacrifices. I get that, but the Patriots.
I don't know that he's making any sacrifices between you and me.
Well, Brady's also making a lot of money in other entities of his life, too. I'm not talking about the
that
wife. I'm talking about he has his hands in a variety of different things. But the point is, the Patriots also have the luxury that they're not paying Tom Brady as if he is the greatest quarterback in the NFL right now.
Correct.
So that gives them the flexibility
to
address
other areas. No question about it.
Not every team has that luxury.
Yep, I absolutely agree with you.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get more into the Alex Smith trade, what that means for the NFC East. We'll also look ahead to Super Bowl 52. And get your phone calls on a variety of different issues and topics related to the New York Giants. Start off with Timothy in Jackson, New Jersey. Timothy, what's happening?
Hi, fellas. How are you?
Hi. All right, Timothy. What do you got for us?
after the Super Bowl ends, the Giants will name Eagles running backs coach Deuce Daly offensive coordinator, replacing Mike Sullivan.
Okay, so I'm assuming that's a prediction on your part, Timothy.
Thank you.
Okay, appreciate the phone call. So Timothy making a prediction that Deuce Daly, the Eagles running backs coach, is going to be named the Giants offensive coordinator.
Knows Pat Shurmur from his time in Philadelphia. Certainly an accomplished running back who knows the division very well. And, you know, that's a guy who has a good football pedigree. What else can you say?
Now, at the press conference, Pat Shurmur did confirm he will be calling plays, which Dave Gettleman also confirmed when he spoke to the media down at the Senior Bowl. We know that. He, at the time of his press conference, Paul, and I'm paraphrasing, did say that he was still working out things in terms of an offensive coordinator, but didn't necessarily shy away and said that he wouldn't hire an offensive coordinator. And the reason I bring that up is we had Brad Childress on the program last week, who served as Pat Shurmur's offensive coordinator the second year in Cleveland. But remember, the first year as a head coach, he did not have an OC.
Correct.
He was the guy that served as the OC slash head coach.
And it's interesting because it was Childress who explained to us the pitfalls of calling the plays while being the head coach, had indicated that perhaps you could say that's not a great idea. However, at the same time, Pat has decided that he's going to do it. I think the one caveat, and look, I was very critical of McAdoo doing it. He, of course, was a first-time coordinator who was also doubling as a first-time head coach. To me, as I said many times on this program, I thought that was much too big of an apple to bite into. You like the food analogy again?
Well, listen, I'm never disappointed. The only thing that I'm disappointed is I like the Italian food analogies.
All right.
Now you're expanding your horizon.
Well,
but anyway,
that's a large loaf of Italian bread.
Okay, there we go. You're regrouped.
Okay.
And you're recovered.
And for that reason, I was really not in favor of that and had some doubts about how that would work out. Of course, he later on gave up the plays to Mike Sullivan later in the 2017 season. But you're looking at Shurmur, this is a guy now who's had a chance to actually do it both ways. He called his own plays by himself his first year in Cleveland. Then his second year in Cleveland, the way Pat described it to us, it was a cooperative effort between him and Brad Childress.
Yeah, tag team effort.
Which I'm guessing he's learned, as he said, many things from his time with the Browns. That was probably something he learned, you know, by having the opportunity to do it in a couple of different ways. So based on his previous experience, plus his prior experience in the league as a coordinator. Remember, he's almost 20 years in the NFL now. I'm willing to sit back and say, okay, benefit of the doubt. This guy knows what he's doing. Let's see how it works out. But I do think it bears watching, and I think if it doesn't go very well, he needs to at least have the flexibility, which he has shown in the past, to have somebody else get in there.
You adapt. Just like Ben McAdoo essentially adapted when he gave it over to Mike Sullivan, as you mentioned. But I think, you know, this is the other part of weighing, and we've heard from a variety of different callers on this subject, Paul, about how, you know, they want the head coach to strictly focus on game management and not be bottled down with the play calling. But keep in mind, part of the appeal of bringing in somebody like Pat Shurmur is what he did as a play caller.
Yes.
You know, you can't lose sight of that. I guess that's my point. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, you automatically bring in a guy in and he has to be the offensive coordinator slash play caller and head coach, but I don't think you can overlook the fact that one of the reasons why he got himself back into the head coaching candidate label is because of what he achieved in Minnesota over the last 2 years.
That is true.
So to just throw that to the wayside and say, oh, now he's just going to be a head coach and you don't want him involved in the play calling and the ins and outs of an offensive game plan during the course of a contest, I think then defeats the whole purpose of what made him appealing to begin with.
Here's what I will say, because Pat did indicate to us in his presser that he does have a lot of conversation with all of the coaches, including the guys upstairs in the box on the headset. He's very much into cooperative efforts and getting a lot of input from all the guys. He made that very clear.
He did.
There are some head coaches who aren't as amiable to that, who want as little in their headset as possible. He indicated to us he likes the chatter in the headsets. He wants to be able to listen and to talk to everybody at the same time a lot. I think it's interesting that when you look at Shurmur and you say, well, what about the game management situation? There are coaches in the NFL, and I'll give you a great example. Bill Parcells years ago when he was the Giants head coach, Ray Handley was his running backs coach. Handley was the game management guy. He was the guy that Parcells entrusted to tell him or advise him about the clock, the timeout selections, you know.
Which is key.
And because Bill didn't want to deal with that. Bill felt that during the course of the game, he had too much that he wanted to deal with, whether it was the quarterbacks or talking to Belichick or whatever else he wanted to do. He told Ray, listen, you deal with the clock. You figure out how many plays we need to run the clock down. You figure out where the timeout should go. He was the game management guy. Even though his official title was running backs coach, he was the unofficial game management guy. It's quite possible that Pat Shurmur winds up taking one of his assistants.
He may assign somebody.
And he may assign somebody to be the game management guy, which then kind of alleviates the issue that Childress was talking about.
Correct, in terms of being so enamored with your sheet as opposed to what's going on with the game.
You may lose something.
No, listen, I think that is an extremely wise move. I think actually every head coach should have somebody by their side that is some type of a game manager. And I'll take it a step further, Paul. I'd want somebody next to me if I was a head coach who knew the rule book backwards and forwards. Mm-hmm. That's what I would want. I would actually hire an additional assistant coach, and his label, his title, is rule book, period. And every time I have a question about what can be reviewed, what can't, what game situation, I would turn to that individual.
Isn't it funny you say that? Because how many managers in baseball have a bench coach?
Yeah.
Because that guy is just someone to bounce things off of. They may assign him a specific duty, but more often than not, he's just somebody who he just wants to talk to and says, you know, this is what I'm thinking. You see that? What do you think about that? I kind of had an idea. What do you think? The bench coach in baseball has become a very big deal to a lot of teams. And it's not necessarily teams that are winning or losing. It's across the board. It depends on that particular manager, whether or not he wants a bench coach. But this is a commonplace thing now. I've never heard of a bench coach in the NFL. What would you call him? What would you...
Well, I mean, you could call him...
Just assistant? Just a special assistant
to
head coach?
You could call him assistant head coach or whatever it may be. And it's funny because Childress, remember, was the assistant head coach of Andy Reid. He actually...
Right.
It came out this week. He officially retired. I know there was some speculation, but... That's what I would call him. Call him the assistant head coach, and then you sort of tell him he can have his hands involved in a variety of different facets of the team. But on game day, he doesn't have to worry about the running backs. He doesn't have to worry about the offensive
you
line.
You give him a specific duty. Just be there if I have a question.
Correct.
That's it.
Sort of like a drawing board that he's there to, like you said, have a back and forth of a conversation about game flow. I think that's a must. If I were a head coach, that would be one of my first hirings. I'd make sure that I have somebody that's knowledgeable, has experience, and knows the rules.
The game is so complicated nowadays.
Yeah.
The sub-packages and all the different rules and the rules changes.
Of course.
Then what can you replay? What can't you replay?
Yeah.
It's really so confusing. And, I can understand if somebody wanted to do that. But to my knowledge, again, there have been, like you said, Brad Childress was an assistant to Andy Reid. I don't know if he was, quote, the bench coach like we're talking about. I don't know what his role was there. But it doesn't seem like that role has kind of morphed its way into the NFL yet. It's more of a baseball deal.
Correct. No, I agree with you. I thought the bench coach was the perfect analogy that you came up with. I think spells out exactly what I'm talking about, Paul. And you're right. If you look across every NFL coaching staff, not everyone has an assistant head coach.
No.
Very
or
few
an associate
teams.
Head coach is another title
coach,
they use,
whatever you want to label. I mean, the two that come to mind is, as I mentioned, Brad Childress was somebody that had that role with Kansas City. I also know when Jeff Fisher was the Rams head man, Dave McGinnis was his associate / assistant head coach. But no, it's not a consistent thing across the board. And a guy like Pat Shurmur, when you know you have experience as a play caller, you also have experience as a head coach, I think an associate assistant head coach would be right up his alley because it would provide him with a complement to help game management, but he can still handle the ins and outs of the offense.
We will see what he thinks about this because to this point, he has not filled out his entire staff. Once that's done, maybe then the question gets asked, would that have been a consideration?
No, I think that's a valid question. Yeah, the only official member of the coaching staff is James Betcher as the defensive coordinator, because Pat Shurmur announced that at his press conference. Everything else, I mean, feel free to call in, but nothing is official. Nothing has been formally announced by the New York Giants in terms of the rest of the staff members. With that being said, let's head back to the lines. 201-939-4513. Travis is in Queens. Travis, what's happening?
Hey, fellas, how you guys been?
Doing all right, Travis. How you been?
Good, good, good. The last two episodes, yesterday and Monday, I didn't tune in. So if I may ask a question that I didn't hear.
Well, Travis, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable, Travis. So, I'm at the point where I'm wondering whether or not I should even let you continue with this phone call, the fact that you didn't make it a priority to watch Monday and Tuesday's program, so that you may ask us a question that we already exhausted all our energy answering it, Travis. You know, that was a big risk on your part for being very upfront with us. I'm going to let this one slide. I don't want it to ever happen again. You better make sure you watch every episode before you call back in.
Trust me, you got it. You got it. So, look, right? But it's more so it's like the callers. I hear a lot of callers, you know, talking about the draft and the quarterbacks, right? But I'm not hearing enough of people mention the fact that, you know, the quarterback position, I hear Rose's name a lot. Like, we don't value the problem as far as, like, his concussions. Now, if it was a running back that had an ACL injury a year ago and he had a good year this year, the first thing we would mention would be, well, look, he had an ACL. I don't know. Would you go second round? But we can't not act as if, you know, having a concussion problem is not a major risk.
Of course. Look, I will tell you this. A longtime NFL personnel guy said this to me about Rosen, because I asked him. I said, would that concussion bother you, and would his exploratory shoulder surgery bother you, even though they didn't find anything structurally wrong with his shoulder? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I'm telling you right now, the first thing I'm doing, and the combine has always been primarily because of the medical reports anyway, but he said, right, I got my medical staff turning over every single leaf you can imagine about Josh Rosen, because as of now, I'm going in saying I'm ready to mark him down a full half a grade unless my medical people are willing to clean him up and tell me that he is fine. But he's like, going in, I'm already looking at maybe a half a grade markdown because of medical. But I love the fact that you brought that up. We have not discussed that with any fans over the last couple of months talking about it, because the debate about it has been the man's talent. Do you take a QB at number two? No one has even gotten into the medical part of this, because that's really all going to come out at the combine. We'll have a lot of time to talk about the medical stuff. But I love that you brought this up, because, again, I've been told he could lose as much as a half a grade because of the medical.
Right. Yeah, it's a big thing. And then, too, you know, I was going to say, and the state of the Giants now, I don't even think it's quarterback. I think it's either left, like a tackle, the O-line, and running back. You know, like, what do you do? Do you go running back or do you trade down? Versus, I don't think quarterback for the Giants is really like, that's more so like a necessity. You know, I don't think that's a need. Like, you know, I think what's important is the O-line or, you know, going running back. Now, with that said, to the O-line, right? Like we know Dave Gettleman is going to do something with the O-line as far as free agency. That's That's like dot. That's like you going a full show not talking about the O-line. You know, that's
or some type of Italian food.
Here we go again. Yeah.
Right. So with that being said, right? I really think that Flowers, he might move him to right tackle or left guard. And with that being said, how many players do you think we should keep? Because I think Flowers you can keep.
Flowers is still under contract, so you really don't even have to make a decision on him.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So Jones, right? So two then. Jones and Fluka, I would keep.
Yeah.
Right?
You got to re-sign Fluker, though. He is unrestricted.
Fluker's a free agent.
Right.
Fluker, Richburg, and Pugh. Travis, to answer your question, those are the three that are not under contract. So you have to make some type of a decision on all three of them.
Okay, so now, So now, with that being said, right, I would try to keep those two. And I think with Richburg and Pugh, you let them walk because of the money they're going to want and going to basically attract. Now, do you think Nate Solder and Pugh will see around the same type of money or –
Well, here's the problem you have to weigh. First of all, Soldier's a left tackle. Pugh is a four-position lineman. So his agent will argue that he's going to get big numbers because of his versatility. But now on the other side of the table, any GM who's talking to him is going to say, but you've had injury problems. You've had trouble staying on the field. You're an offensive lineman who just this year had a back issue.
Right.
So, you know, it's really going to be a lot of numbers games here. This is why, my friend, I'd be honest with you. I love when everybody talks about free agents and says, oh, sit this guy, sign this guy.
Right.
There are huge factors involved, including price, including medical report, and including how long do you want to guarantee the guy's contract for.
Yeah.
These are all huge factors, and especially the medical reports. None of us have access to those. I'll be perfectly frank with you. I like Justin Pugh. I think he's a really good player, and I think he's a valuable player. But I don't know what the doctor told him in California when he came back after getting that second opinion on his back. What if he said that, you know what, you have a degenerative condition, and I'm hypothetical here. All right, let me make this clear. But what if he said you have a degenerative condition or you have something that could flare up again at any time?
A lingering issue, basically.
A lingering issue, Well, how do you give him the kind of money he's probably going to ask for if you know he's got damage?
Well, which is why, though, to your point, and we'll let you continue, Travis, the Giants have an advantage because he's been an internal guy.
They know more about him than anybody else does.
They know what has gone on with Justin Pugh over the last few years. Another team, Paul, and this is what I think you're hammering home, it may be a little bit more challenging because they may not have the same access and have consulted with those other doctors that the Giants have sent Pugh to or he has chosen to go to get second opinions and so forth.
Well, they will get medical reports and information on the guy's past, but more importantly, you know if the guy's been in your camp, how he practices, what kind of pain he will tolerate, what he won't tolerate, how does that injury actually impact his play. That's stuff that only you know. That no doctor's report can tell you just by looking inside the manila folder.
Which puts you in a good position to make a wise decision to know whether or not you want to invest in him.
My opinion on that is they'll make a very logical and educated decision on Justin Pugh. If they decide to let him walk, it's because they have true reason not to come up with the numbers that he winds up getting. But if he resigns here, then that says that they have a strong belief that he is going to be a productive player for some years to come, and they didn't want to lose him.
Gotcha. Now, so do you think Gettleman, like how many players do you think he might sign versus the O-line? And because I heard you mention last week, I don't know if these players come from the Panthers or the Patriots that's like low in risk as far as paying them. Like, I think he might go after, I think, by the time the free agency is over in the draft, I think he might combine, like, he got, like, five offensive players, like, on the line. I think he might.
A lot depends, Travis, on what Dave Gettleman thinks of the rookie offensive line class, meaning in the draft.
Right.
If he doesn't think too fondly of that, to your point, I mean, he may turn around and say, listen, if I'm going to improve the offensive line or if I'm going to bring in extra competition, I'm going to have to do it through free agency. So, you know, without necessarily knowing what he thinks of the draft class, it's hard to give you a nice round number to say, well, you would assume that he's going to target three free agent offensive linemen. You'd have to know what he thinks and what the front office thinks of the draft class that plays that offensive line position. We can only go based on track record. And what the track record in Carolina shows, and Paul and I have brought this up multiple times, is he has addressed the offensive line in the draft, hasn't addressed it necessarily with a first or a second round pick, usually has brought in guys in the third, fourth round area, and then also has brought in some free agents. But that doesn't mean that he's going to follow the exact same game plan with the Giants, but that's at least a barometer to see how he has acted and what type of moves he's made as a general manager.
Here's what I will tell you. This may help your picture a little bit. I've been telling people that I believe the Giants need to go out and get three starting caliber guys who can compete for starting job offensive linemen, whether it's two free agents and a draft pick or a draft pick and two draft picks, some combination, two and one, one and two. I don't care. Now, guys who are unrestricted free agents who should attract attention from other teams, okay, along the offensive line. Cameron Fleming made $1.8 million this year with the Patriots. He is their starting right tackle. I would anticipate someone's going to make him a decent offer, and it's not going to take double digits, I don't think, to sign him, because he made $1.8 million this year.
But sometimes once you hit the market for the first time, numbers are inflated. But I hear you.
That's a guy who I think you could probably get a reasonable number on. LeAdrian Waddle is the other gentleman. Swing tackle, played for the Lions earlier in his career, got injured, wound up going to the Patriots, has started in this league, okay? But right now he's the third tackle. So you have Soldier, Fleming, and Waddle, three free agent, unrestricted free agent offensive tackles on the Patriots roster. I can't see them being able to sign all three of them. I just don't see it happening. Now, Waddle this year made a base of just under $1.2 million. I don't see him cashing into double digits either.
No, I think Waddle probably much more reasonable price-wise in terms of contracts, more so than Fleming.
So to me, a team that needs immediate help at tackle, those might be guys you'd be looking at.
Soldier, by the way, also has experience at right tackle as well as left tackle. He started out on the right side in
his career. Already with an average yearly salary now of almost $11 million, he's going to get some bucks.
Oh, and he's under 30 years old, too.
Yes.
So you combine both of those factors. And, Travis, listen, appreciate the phone call. Kudos to you.
I'm going to go back and listen, too.
I was just going to compliment you, Travis. You actually brought up a few subjects that were repetitious from what happened on Monday and Tuesday. So even without listening. Right. I think you really challenged us, so we appreciate that. But don't let that happen again. I demand that you make sure you listen and view every program before you call in. Appreciate the phone call. You got it. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Twitter as well. Hashtag Giants Chat. Let's head back to the lines. We got Scott in New Mexico. Scott, welcome aboard. What do you got?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
How are you, Scott?
Good. Before I get to my Giant questions, in regards to this trade with
Alex Smith,
Washington, Kansas City, do you think, I don't know if you can even answer this question, but do you think that Alex Smith sort of became a sacrificial lamb because Andy Reid had such a poor record in playoff games with Kansas City, and that why they had to get rid of him, so to speak?
Well, Alex Smith played well, though. Scott, I mean, he was not the reason they lost to Tennessee and coughed up that lead. Same thing with respect to the Indianapolis Colts playoff game a few years prior. And Alex Smith helped the team make the playoffs four of the 5 years that he was the starting quarterback. So everybody who thinks Patrick Mahomes is this nice, shiny first-round pick who's going to step in and the Chiefs are not going to miss a beat, I think you're not appreciating what Alex Smith accomplished in Kansas City. I think they looked at it as...
I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying that Alex Smith was traded because of Andy Reid's inability to win a playoff game.
No.
And that he should have still remained as a Kansas
I don't think
City
that had anything to do with
I'm
it.
I'm with Lance on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think they looked at it that Alex Smith had 1 year left on his contract. They drafted Patrick Mahomes in the first round.
Who they are very high on.
Correct. And they figured that, listen, we don't really want to give Alex Smith a 4 to 5 year extension. We want to move on to the younger option. Let's get value for Alex Smith with a year left on his contract, and we're ready to hand over the reins to Mahomes. That's why they traded Alex Smith. I don't think it had anything to do with the lack of postseason success, because you're looking at a team that has been consistently getting to the playoffs, and Alex Smith has been a consistent quarterback for them. So why would you get rid of him for the sake of getting rid of him? It's got much more to do with Patrick Mahomes and them using a high draft pick on him and wanting him to now all of a sudden gain some experience.
They wanted to clear out the traffic in front of him.
Absolutely.
I think that's all it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in regards to the Giants, I reviewed a little bit last night on the offensive tackles. I think the previous caller addressed some of the issues, and you guys did too. There was a couple of other ones. Donald Penn from the Raiders, he's 35, that got fairly high marks as an offensive tackle, and also Juwan James from Miami. And he's a right tackle, but I was wondering what your feelings are on those two guys. I know about Holder, and I know about Cameron Fleming.
Yeah, James has not exactly made everybody in Dolphins land very happy with his play over the course of time. You know that Donald Penn was actually here at one point. The Giants had entertained him a couple of years back when he was an unrestricted free agent. They had asked him if he would play right tackle and negotiated some kind of numbers with him and stuff. He decided no, that he wasn't going to come. In fact, he may have actually turned around without actually meeting. He was on his way to the Giants. I'm not sure if he actually made it here.
Well, you just wonder whether or not he was using that as leverage, because if memory serves me correct, Paul, I think Penn actually wound up holding out with the Raiders too. So I don't know whether or not he truly wanted to leave. I just think he was looking for another team to come in to maybe get him a few more dollars.
And he is signed, by the way, through the 2019 season. So I don't know if you're talking about trying to acquire him in a trade, because you're not signing him as a free agent. He's under contract.
Oh, okay. The other two guys that I was curious about, one's cornerback, one's the guard from Carolina, Andrew Norwell. But I was also thinking about Malcolm Butler, what your opinion was on potentially the Giants trying to get him.
Why don't you take this one?
Well, Butler is going to demand a lot of money on the open market, I will tell you that. You know, whether or not you think that he's been able to build off of that game-sealing Super Bowl play, I don't necessarily is the bigger point. It's hard to find somebody who can be a number one corner in this league that is going to be on the free agent market. So, I mean, if you're looking at Malcolm Butler to the Giants, number one, he's going to cost a lot of money. And then here's the other way to look at it. Keep in mind, Scott, I mean, you've got DRC, you've got Janoris Jenkins, and Eli Apple is still under contract. Why do the Giants need another corner like a Malcolm Butler?
The reason I'm querying you on that is I don't know what the situation is with Eli Apple in regards to whether they want him on the New York Giants.
I understand that, but I think right now we have to operate under the fact he's under contract, and until there's some type of change, the Giants right now have three starting corners, and they can always look to bolster the depth chart if they want to go out and sign some other complimentary guy.
I would say this. I anticipate the Giants to re-sign Ross Cockrell.
Well, they
actually
did
a
fourth guy.
Really
nice
he did
a solid job
this
as the fourth
year.
Guy. Yeah.
You know? So and he's not going to cost a lot of money, I don't think.
I think that there's far more other pressing positions, in my opinion, Scott, that I think the Giants would be better off utilizing their financial resources on, much more so than going after another starting number one caliber corner.
Okay. In regards to the second pick, I know what Paul, you're very high on trading down and getting as many picks as you can, which makes sense. But if a quality player, this is my query, and maybe you can tell me why I'm wrong. Everybody seems to be high. I don't think he's going to last in the second round. I think a guy like Will Hernandez is the real deal. I've actually seen game films of him, and I've actually seen him lift a 300-pound tackle off the ground.
He's a hog molly.
That'll fit that bill.
I've not seen since the days of Larry Allen. So I'm trying to think, if he's available at number two, I mean, if the Giants were smart, why wouldn't they take somebody like that at number two, since they have a real need for interior alignment as well as a left tackle? And
You mean second round?
No,
yes?
I'm assuming, Scott, you're talking about the number two overall pick, right?
Correct.
Yeah, he's talking about the number two overall pick.
Well, for a couple of reasons. A, it's assumed that he is, at best, late first-round material. So to pick him number two.
Is what makes him late first-round material as opposed to, say, a top echelon player like Quentin Nelson or one of those guys?
Well, you have to look at, A, the position that he plays. He's a guard, and guards don't command the kind of premium that top 10
linemen don't
picks
go as
do.
Top 10 picks. Yeah.
That's very, 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 very rare. You know, the position itself kind of devalues him a little bit. He's not going to be a top 10 guy if he's a guard. That's number one. Number two, there are still, he's not the perfect guy. I mean, I agree with you. I think he's a heck of a prospect. But it's not a 100% slam dunk all pro coming right out of the cereal box. I mean, he is going to need some work now. There's no question about that, especially against some of these quick, penetrating, undersized defensive tackles. Did you see what Puna Ford did to him the other day?
There was a play, and
if you watch the Senior Bowl, there was a play, and it disappointed me. I didn't want to see it because I like the kid. I like Hernandez a lot. I also think Puna Ford's going to play in this league, by the way. He's a 5'11", 300-pound defensive tackle from Texas. And basically, he went and slipped through the gap and went underneath Hernandez to where Hernandez was just so big and mammoth, he couldn't deal with that guy. And Puna Ford, just like a little rocket, went right past him by going underneath. So, you know, there are more and more of these finesse technique penetrating type of defensive tackles in the league nowadays. He is going to have to learn how to deal with those guys because Hernandez is a big boxcar of a man.
Right.
So, you know, you can't draft him number two overall. There's no way. But you're going to tell me number two in the second round, 34th overall pick, I'm jumping for joy.
Yeah. I'm not hung up again on number, you know, where you draft. I'm a big need guy, and I know the Giants have sort of had the opposite attitude, take the best guy on the board. And if their need is an offensive line, and free agency, as I looked at it, wasn't, you know, there aren't going to be a lot of guys coming out that are going to be top quality. I was just thinking that guys like that, if you can grab them when you can. Because I don't think he's going to make it through the first round.
Yeah, but I think, Scott, in an ideal world, I get where you're going in terms of the need. You want to combine need and value. And that's where I get back to Paul's point. While you could argue offensive line is a need, the value of taking an interior lineman or somebody that's projected to be an interior lineman at the number two overall pick, in all likelihood, you may increase your chances of getting him in this high second round when you pick again. Why would you waste your number two overall pick on him? That's why you've got to combine value with need. And you never want to reach on a player because then all you're doing is you're basically gift-wrapping an opportunity for the teams that are coming right after you. So why would you not then capitalize the great value? You know, for example, I'll bring up the Chiefs because you start off with Alex Smith, and somebody brought this point up to me on Twitter. I was saying how, you know, the quarterback may be the best valued player when it's all said and done for the Giants at number two. That doesn't mean that you may agree that they need a quarterback, but in their mind, where they're picking, quarterback is the best value. The Chiefs last year had Alex Smith, and this is where we start off the conversation with you, Scott. You could say at that point, what did they need Patrick Mahomes for? Alex Smith is still young enough. He was performing at a high level. They said to themselves, at that value, at that point, Patrick Mahomes makes sense. So they made that selection, and they knew, listen, Patrick Mahomes may not play this year, but it was too good a value to pass up. Now we move the calendar forward a year later after Mahomes played one game. Now he's going to be their starting quarterback. So that's why I say need and value need to be synonymous with one another where you're not stretching on either side.
I'll give you a number here. NFL Draft Scout says combine ratings over the course of the last 5 years, the five-year draft average for top-notch offensive guards, if I'm seeing this correctly, for guys to make it into the top 100 is only six guys. I mean, it's, you know, guards by their nature, just they don't carry a premium. But I'll say this to you. This is why you'd be smart to trade down.
Right.
Trade down and take an offensive lineman at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, wherever it is you want to go. You can certainly take Quentin Nelson out of Notre Dame if you want to take him at 11.
And you get an extra draft pick out of it.
Sure.
So, to me, that's the best of both worlds. And, Scott, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live where we will not be playing his introduction. Only John Schmelk does that because he's the only one, apparently, that sees value in it. It's Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Mr. Illness. Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Charlie,
could be better.
What is it that upset you this morning? Is it that we were doing the program or you didn't like the Sterling Shepard photograph?
No, that was his failed attempt at sarcasm. Come on.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
I read that from a mile away. Yeah.
Hey, look, I know this isn't official or anything, But I think one of the most important positions, coaches, to be hired is the offensive line coach.
Stunner. Charlie, I never expected you to say that. I mean, I'm glad that you made that apparent on this program, because if you didn't, I didn't know where you were going to go with that.
But what I've heard is this guy named Hal Hunter. Now, I've read a little bit about him. I don't know too much about him, but I think there's probably some better people out there, but I'm not 100% sure. So I wanted PDOT's take on him and if he knows anything about this guy.
Hunter's been with three different NFL organizations over the course of the last several years, whether it be the Browns, the Colts, or the Chargers. His father was also an offensive line coach, so he comes from a pretty good family of football people. But that's all I know about him right now, because until I find out, you know, what the deal is with him and if he, in fact, is going to land at the Meadowlands, I'm not really doing a lot of homework.
Well, and the one thing I'm going to add here, Charlie, and I don't remember what your feelings were on this subject, but I'm sure you're going to make them clear for us here in a second. But I remember there was a lot of chatter, okay, towards the end of Pat Flaherty's tenure, where people were calling for, on this program, it was time to move on. It was time to get a different voice. And, oh, by the way, look at what Pat Flaherty has done in Jacksonville, Paul, with that Jaguars offensive line.
Guy's a quality coach.
So my point is with that. Now, nothing's official, as you mentioned, and I'm not here to judge any coaches, and I'm not saying that coaches are not important, so don't misinterpret my words, but I think sometimes we got to be careful, and the talent on the offensive line is far more important than any coach you could sell me on at their respective position. At the end of the day, you need the hog, Mollies, as Dave Gettleman says. And the coaching could be the difference between taking that group to the next level. But you need the talent at the end of the day, Charlie.
Charlie, I don't care who's coaching the O-line. But what he's saying is they better go out and get some more fortification.
Hey, and the other thing I wanted to say, we've got some guys that were buried on the IR that I think can really help this
year. Who you got?
I mean, you got DeBunker, which the kid from Tennessee, he looks like one of those, dog type of offensive lineman.
Charlie,
do
you really want to do that? Do you really want to bank yourself on one of those guys?
Give them a good shot, though. I mean, give them, you know, an opportunity.
A guy like Duggar will have
Isaac,
a – Yeah, he'll
Isaac
have a chance.
Williams.
Yeah, he'll have – well, I don't know that Isaac Williams – by the way, you know, I don't know that he's even coming back to camp. I don't even know that. I like the kid. I think he's a good guy, and he was an intriguing prospect. But first of all, he's on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about people on the IR, though, that I think can actually
I thought you were talking
about. That's what he's talking about, yeah.
And with Bet's system, I think Isaac Williams will fit really well. And there's another guy.
You know who I like better? Charlie, real quickly, before you go on your laundry list, you know who I like better than Isaac Williams? I like Ishaq Williams. I think he can contribute
Ishaq.
To the Giants a lot better than Isaac. You know, this is also, just for the sake of the callers, before you go on your dissertation, I'm sorry, I can't.
That's all right.
Charlie is the same individual that was campaigning for Will Beatty to be a starting offensive tackle for just about any NFL team.
Yes.
Well,
and Will
Beatty, with our O-line, he should have been a starting.
Well, and Will Beatty has signed with the Philadelphia Eagles, and Will Beatty has been active. How many times, Paul, has he been active,
Zero.
By the way?
He's going to be active for this Super Bowl.
Oh, he's going to be active.
Is he?
I told you. I said this on Twitter. If he's active for the Super Bowl, you could keep your lobsters. Okay?
You
can keep your lobsters,
you.
And Jeff Eagles does not need to accept them. And I know I'm not a part of the trade. I am that confident you can keep your lobsters.
But all I'm saying
but
is
who,
that.
Who else on IR, by the way? Who else on IR should we be looking forward to?
Well, I think Jordan Williams. He played a little bit this year. I think he could fit in Betts' defensive system. There's a couple of tackles, too, that are not rookies. They're four-year vets. One was Beckton, I think his name is, and one is Gibson, Lawrence Gibson. I think it's Lawrence. But I'm just saying, there's a few guys
Nick
that got
Beckton,
buried
you're talking about.
On the IR that I said if they just give them an opportunity to play and compete. The problem was we never allowed anyone to compete with Eric Flowers. We didn't allow
anyone.
You know?
I'm surprised at you. You have an opportunity in this draft, which has got a pretty good amount of offensive linemen in the top four rounds. You got a chance to maybe go get two of them.
Oh,
why wouldn't you do that?
I want to get those guys, too. But I'm just saying, don't forget the people that we have.
They could compete for maybe the eighth or ninth spot on the line,
Charlie,
but I don't want them playing.
Listen, Charlie, you got 90 guys on the roster before they narrow it down. So there's plenty of an opportunity. I'm not disagreeing with you. If they want to bring back some of these banged up guys from the previous season, there's no harm in that. But remember, Dave Gettleman wasn't here, Charlie. So Dave Gettleman may not think highly of them the way you do. You have to take that into consideration.
Point is,
because he's got new eyes.
You know, if you're drafting offensive linemen in the first, second, or third rounds, you want those guys to be competing for the job.
Correct.
More so than some guy on IR.
Very fair. Yeah.
No, I agree. I'm not saying don't do that.
All right, we're
good. I'm just saying don't forget these guys. I gave you some guys to look out for this year.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, there's 89 guys that are penciled in. The 90th, we're hoping for Will Beatty to make his return, Charlie, just for you.
Hey, he could be back next year.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. 89 guys have been penciled into the roster. That one remaining spot, you know who it's for.
Charlie, did you see the Senior Bowl?
No, I didn't catch all. I saw, parts of it, but I didn't see.
You would have loved Will Hernandez.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I saw some plays that he made. Yeah.
Oh, he is just a force at left guard. He is just an absolute force.
I'll take him. Let's just get a good old line coach. That's what we need. So.
All right, take care.
Well, Charlie, have you dusted off your resume before we let you go? How's your resume look, Charlie?
I sent it in.
You did? Oh, I'm just making sure. Well, why don't you send me one so that I can make sure it goes into the inappropriate tray here at the Giants facility? You send it to me. I will definitely put in a bad word for you. Absolutely.
You mean bin, don't you?
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Boy, I tell you, Charlie is the gift that keeps on giving on this program. He never disappoints for us. Let's head back to the phone lines. Oh, indeed. As John
swears he's
going to
be active, John. Swears Beatty's going to be active for the Super Bowl.
When have we not had a phone call from him about Will Beatty? There we go. Exactly. See, John didn't even know what the hell was going on with the conversation.
He heard Charlie. He comes in and goes, Will Beatty?
See? Your reputation procedure there, Charlie. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Antonio is in Philly speaking of Will Beatty. Antonio, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're doing all right. How are things with you?
Things are okay here in Philly, just trying to stay calm with this whole Eagles town going all crazy.
Understandable.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to the show yesterday, and I was very glad that you guys had that guy on to talk about the offensive line and the running backs. And he made a very important point in regards to Barkley and the next group of running backs. And most of the reports were saying that Barkley is number one, and this running back from LSU, he's like 1A. And this Barkley, he's kind of scaring me because you guys know the history of Penn State running backs. They don't do that well in the NFL.
Kurt Warner was really good with the with the Seahawks.
Yeah. So saying that, I will say is the Giants will be better off passing on Barkley and probably try to trade to accumulate more picks, especially now with the signing of the quarterbacks and what's probably going to start going on in free agency. I have a trade for you, Paul.
Okay.
So let's just say that Buffalo calls you. Buffalo Bills is going to give you the 21st, the 22nd pick in the first round.
Okay.
The 58th pick in the second round.
Okay.
And a third round pick for the 2019. Would you make that?
You want to give me both of the ones and a two this year, and then you want to give me a third rounder the following year.
Correct.
I don't think I would do it.
Well, because look at it this way. You can draft your offensive lineman at the 20th pick, and you can draft your running back, Darius Yusey. I guarantee you, after the combine and all the pro days, this guy is probably going to go probably in the top 15 or somewhere around there. He's not going to last till the second round or the late first round.
There's a theory that when you ask for a future pick in the following year's draft, that whatever you think the appropriate value is, you go up one more round. Because you're assuming that the team you're getting the trade from is going to be better and improved over the course of the year. So, therefore, you want to get one round better given the potential that they will be better. So, if you want to give me a second rounder instead of the third rounder the following year, I think we could talk about that.
Okay, so let's.
I'd think about it. I'm not telling you I'd jump at it, but I'd at least think about it. You're going to give me the two ones this year. You're going to give me a two this year, and you're going to give me a two next year. Yeah. I'd think about it. And I haven't even looked at the numbers in the value chart and what the trade value chart says. I'm strictly going on gut feel just by talking to you right now. There is a chart that, you know, the Jimmy Johnson chart that everybody has seen on the web that's been put out. I have access to a different chart because there is a different chart that has been constructed which only accounts for real trades that have been made since the Jimmy Johnson time utilizing only draft picks. It's a rare chart. It's not easily accessible. Not everybody has it. Some teams go by that one as opposed to the Jimmy Johnson one because they believe that over the course of time, the Jimmy Johnson one has been outdated. I would want to look at that chart also before I actually gave you an answer, but I would at least think about that, the two ones, a two, and a two next year. I would think about that.
Yeah, because Buffalo, they have the 21st
and the 22nd.
Yeah,
they got back-to-back first-rounders because of the Patrick Mahomes trade.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you.
You could probably get your offensive lineman and your running back in the late first round. And if you want to, you could probably get another offensive lineman in the second round,
of course.
Or your linebacker, depending on what your board looks like.
See, because I've been thinking right now that going in for the last month or so, we've talked about this, Lance. I'm kind of thinking don't trade further down than like 11 with the Dolphins.
Correct. I remember
that's
having that conversation.
That's kind of where I feel.
Yeah, you were not fond of moving down even further.
I really want to go down further than that.
Though it is appealing to have back-to-back first rounders.
It is. I think part of what's going to make my decision for me is I get to the draft, first of all, obviously what happens in free agency, which is going to have a big impact on that. Because if I'm still looking for offensive linemen, then I got to say, okay, let me really narrow this down. How many offensive linemen, first rounders, you know, you're talking about Zeus Jr., you're talking about McGlinchey, you're talking about Quentin Nelson, you know, Williams, and there's another guy too who's a first-round tackle potential. And I'd be saying, okay, what's the chances that I'm definitely going to get one of those guys at 21, 22?
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm saying probably, but I'd have to look at it closer. But at least you're on the right track. At least you're proposing something that makes some sense. I love that as opposed to these people who just go 150 miles an hour. Got to take a quarterback, please.
Well, remember, and it also depends on whether or not the Giants think of those offensive linemen as first-rounders too. Remember,
no question.
That's another big part of the equation. Just because the so-called experts think they're first-round caliber talent doesn't mean that the Giants are necessarily going to look at them as first-rounders. So, you know, all of those things need to be taken into consideration. And another part of weighing whether or not you should stay where you are or move down is if you think that the player that you want at number two is not going to be around even if you move down, or if you're in favor of three of the four available quarterbacks and you're okay with moving out because you feel that you're going to get one of those remaining QBs if you move down, you know, then I could see that there's rationale behind moving down. A lot of it depends on how high they think of a guy that they think they can only get at number two. If in their mindset the Giants feel the best value in this draft is Saquon Barkley, for example, and they're like, we want Barkley if he's available at two, they're not going to move out because they know you're not going to get him if you move down.
The other guy I was talking about, Mississippi State, Martinez Rankin, who was supposed to be sneaking in there into the late first round. He's the other tackle who I've also heard of as having a shot to be there. So, you know, it's an interesting thought. And, I appreciate the creativity. As we get closer, as we get beyond free agency, it's really worth having this conversation in terms of what would you take? What's the package you're going to need to make that trade? But free agency is going to have to play out first before we get real serious about that kind of talk.
Yeah. And I will say this, too. In free agency, the Giants or any team, they will definitely be overpaying for any of these offensive linemen. So it's like, do you really want to overpay for these offensive linemen? And that's the big question.
Well, I think every team is weighing that. I think that's a fair point, and appreciate the phone call, Antonio. Thanks so much for weighing in. The other thing that's important to note is, and I mentioned this earlier, Dave Gettleman never took an offensive lineman in the first round when he was the Panthers' general manager. Mm-hmm. Once again, read into that as much as you wish.
But he doesn't reach either, because he never took a guy in the trenches past the fourth round. Never. Didn't gamble on any 5th, 6th, or 7th rounder saying, oh, they're a project, they're a diamond in the rough, we'll coach them up and they'll be good. No. He knew that if you're going to get quality guys in the trenches, you get them by the fourth round.
That meaning his cutoff. 13, he did take an offensive lineman, took a guard in the fourth round. 2014, took a guard in the third round. 2015, took a tackle in the fourth round. 2016, no offensive lineman. And then this past year, a tackle in the second round. Just to give you an idea of where he went with offensive linemen. But never an offensive lineman in the first round. Defensive lineman in the first round. Never an offensive lineman.
And that doesn't surprise me, because years ago, back in the 80s, a lot of the scouts used to tell me all the time, if you're expecting an offensive lineman to come in and compete for a starting job, you better grab him by the third round. That was back in the 80s. Okay, nowadays, because of the watered-down offensive lines in the NFL, I'd say it's fair to say you get a fourth-round offensive lineman, he's got a chance to compete for a job. But use that logic and apply it to what Gettleman's track record is, and you can understand why. He's not reaching. Same thing with the defensive line. He's not taking 5th, 6th, or 7th-round defensive lineman either. He's not going to reach.
And that's a no-no for any team. It's not just the Giants. You never want to reach, because when you reach, then you wind up regretting it, and then all of a sudden that puts you behind the eight ball.
I'm talking reach in the reverse way. Not reach by putting
a guy higher. In terms of, like, waiting.
I'm talking about waiting so long that, oh, we'll get that long shot, that dark horse, that diamond in the rough. We'll get a sixth rounder, and he's going to compete for a job because we think he's a steal. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, so basically what you're saying is putting a position on the back burner and waiting to address it
later. Correct.
But at the same time, I'm also arguing then having too much urgency can cost you as well.
Sure it can. There's no that's more of the true reach in the truest sense of the word. I think what I'm talking about is waiting and trying to find steals.
Yes.
That's he's not doing that when it comes to the trenches. He's not gambling on steals.
But if you look at Gettleman's steals at that position, it's come more through free agency than it's come through the draft.
Correct.
He has brought in guys off the street than necessarily taking them in the 6th or the 7th
round.
Because one of the players that I believe one of the earlier callers brought up was Andrew Norwell, who was first-team All-Pro this past year. Was an undrafted player with the Carolina Panthers.
And boy, you know he's going to look to cash.
Well, yes, because he is a free agent. I think that's why the caller touched on him. We didn't have an opportunity.
I don't even talk about him, because I got to think he's looking for about 3 Brinks trucks to pull into his driveway.
I can only imagine what his agent is thinking. First team all pro, undrafted free agent. Yeah, they're looking to have a nice free agency session this offseason. Just going out on a limb there in terms of saying that. With that being said, appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets over the last hour. Good discussion, as always. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running every day the remainder of the week, starting at noon Eastern. We'll get more into the Giants' draft plans, what they ultimately will do in free agency, and the ins and outs of what may happen in the NFC East now that we know Kirk Cousins will no longer be within the division. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.